In this episode, discover how to dominate Google search results without paying for ads.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery.
Hey-o. All right. Okay, so the quarantine's still rolling on a little bit. Arizona's kind of back to, I don't know if I'd say back to normal, but we've got like three people in the office today. Most people are working remotely, and the beat goes on. The transition we've really been having is we're still creating our clients' web projects, and they're laying out their strategies and so on, but there's a lot of remote video production being done right now as a fill or a placeholder until we can get back in front of people and start creating really killer high production videos. But there's also some good news and opportunities. You know, one of my jobs is to show you how you can convince and convert in this new world. And one of the easiest ways to do it is to position your business to dominate Google search results without having to pay for ads. So to help make your life easier, well, I set up this interview with Damon Burton. Hi, and thank you for joining me right here on the Toddcast. Look, I know that we've entered a new world, and this big transition is all about turning your website into your best salesperson. And the way to do that, well, we've been talking about over multiple episodes of the podcast of Video Marketing Mastery, and I love to bring these things live across LinkedIn and Facebook to followers. So feel free as we go through this episode. And today we're going to be talking about using Google to help your overall search ranking, to get in front of prospects, to create awareness without having to need ads. And I love this because a big portion of the world now is people having this mindset that you've got to buy in order to get attention. And there's also other tactics and ways, and we've been covering this, of using video as a tool for discovery, to pique awareness and to move people into from zone one discovery into zone two when they get onto your website and they start going through that journey. And those that can master the free parts can use resources elsewhere to be able to ramp up and increase revenue, get in front of more people. So there's a lot of opportunities to look for free opportunities. You can invest your money accordingly. And so that's why I wanted to spend some time with today's guest. I'm joined right now by Damon Burton, who is a founder, hey, Damon, thanks for joining me. Hey, so Damon is a Forbes contributor. He's a SEO. He's also the author of a book right now on showing up to get higher Google results without paying for ads. His new book, Outrank, just dropped like 11 days ago. Damon, Welcome to the Toddcast.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to chat like this. You know, like you said, so many people are stuck in the paid world, and there's nothing wrong with that, but there's so many other ways.
So Damon and I were having a really cool conversation of turning crisis into opportunity before we went live. And in this conversation, you're going to discover that there are a lot of opportunities. Now, Damon, I loved, you know, when I was getting ready to do this interview, I started doing a little bit of background on you, and I cut my teeth as an SEO and was a SMX speaker over the years several times. And
there you go.
So I read in your post something that just kind of triggered a really good, juicy topic. You said, that's why I stick to slow and steady. By the way, I grabbed a later part of the quote. You said, I usually don't get worried about algorithm updates.
Yeah,
and for those that don't know, Google had an algorithmic update recently, as you've never had a client get into a real penalty. And I think this is really interesting because for most people, and correct me if you think I'm wrong here. In fact, if I am, set me straight. But for most people, if you can just follow what Google is asking of content and get into the algorithmic flow, Google's not going to slap you down, and there wouldn't be any reason to have concerns. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. The thing with a lot of these other people that get into SEO is they think it's like this magic thing, which I understand because it's a slow process, and maybe we talk a little bit about that. But the thing is that, you know, Google isn't really hiding its core functionality. Sure, like the real technical stuff, they're not going to tell you the secrets. Right. But like at the end of the day, they want to give you general guidelines because then you make them look good. Like the better content you put out, the more effective website you have, then they want to load that because when somebody searches something and your site shows up and you have all those magic keys in place, then you make them look good. So just make Google look good and stop trying the hacky stuff. And, you know, doing the right thing is, it takes time. But if you do it the right way, you get rewarded and then you don't have to sweat over the penalties and algorithms.
Yeah, it's exactly right. There's black hats and white hats. Today I'm wearing a black hat, but as an SEO, I was always a white hat. For those that don't know, it's just like cowboys and Indians, and the black hats are the bad guys and the white hats are the good guys. Can we talk about some foundational SEO principles that maybe people don't even take into consideration of just how you play by the rules in order to get better results?
Yeah, so the core concepts are actually super simple. And so the reason why people suck at it is because it takes time, right? And so I said it's, you know, it's, it may be easy in concepts, but it's not fast. So the core concepts are, you know, you got bucket number one and bucket number two. So bucket number one is what you do on your website. Bucket number two is what you do externally to your website. So if we drill down one layer further, that bucket number one, you know, lately I've kind of been comparing it to building a house. So you build a house and the first thing you have to do is the foundation, and it's just there and it's ugly. And once it's done, nobody cares to really talk about it. And then bucket number two is the walls and the pretty paint and the furniture. And so bucket number one is build your website's foundation, you know, make it load quickly. Have it be user friendly. Make sure it's mobile friendly, because the majority, as of 2016, the majority of traffic is on a mobile device. So you do those things, you build your foundation, and for the most part, it's done. You know, unless you break it, unless you redesign it, like you're pretty set. And then bucket number two is a popularity contest. And so it's, you know, showcasing to Google you are the authority. You know, you can only rank for what Google can read. So start expressing your authority. You own a business, you're a master at something. So talk about that, share your quirky uniqueness about whatever you do.
And when you mentioned Google can only record what it can read. And what I love about this is, you know, a lot of people know me as the video guy, but video has limitations to some extent when you're only creating video content. And so naturally, that mix has to be some text-based content in order for Google to be able to index you accordingly and know you're an authority. So you kind of have to play in both of those sandboxes as you're laying out your foundation, correct?
Yeah, there are some kind of tricks you can do, though, because you're right. So, you know, if you go to a website and you click your mouse and you can highlight the text, so that's literal text, right? You can read it. But if it's an image, you know, like if I took a picture of this book here, like even though these are words, this is an image, right? And so Google is trying to interpret and analyze what's on that. And it's the same thing for a video. So Google can look at the video and go, okay, I'm analyzing the audio waves and right, I can interpret what it's saying, but am I accurate? So the way that you kind of hold Google's hand and say, here's video, because video is cool and it's digestible, it's shareable, but you may not be able to read it exactly, then what you can do is a couple easy things. So one thing is transcribe it. So use something like Descript. Just drop your video in there. A minute or two later, it's going to kick you out a translation. So your hour-long conversation, that would suck to listen to and type it out, because it's going to take at least an hour, probably two, because you have to listen, pause, type, listen, pause, type.
Totally.
Drop it in Descript 90 seconds later and you got it. And so you can take that and paste that into either your video description on YouTube, or Google has, or YouTube has, you can upload your SRT file. And so, right, you know, Descript and these other providers, you can export that as a compatible file to tell Google exactly what's going on. Now, if you have a WordPress site, I give you a very specific tip.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So if you have a WordPress site, there is a plugin. If you search Google XML video sitemap, there's a plugin that will do a couple things. So I'll give you a couple explanations to kind of bring it full circle. So an XML sitemap is like a roadmap for search engines. And it says, you know, when a search engine comes to your website, it says, I think this is a link, and I think this is a word, and I think this means that. But an XML sitemap says, no, I'm very definitively telling you, here's the blueprint, here's what my website means, and here's where the content is. So that's for text-based content. And so that plugin that I mentioned is for video. And so what it does is every time you embed a YouTube video on your website, you have to realize that that's still a YouTube asset. You know, you didn't upload the raw file to your website, you uploaded it to YouTube. So the way you kind of bridge the gap is you upload that XML plugin if you're on WordPress. And then what happens is that plugin goes, oh, I detected a YouTube video was loaded. Now let's ping Google Search Console. So hopefully you have a Search Console account. If you don't know what it is, it's just the way your website talks to Google. And so when you load a video, this plugin goes, hey Google, I got a new video over here. And it's right. This YouTube one, but associate it with this content on my page, not your YouTube page.
And then the spider bots arrive, then it starts indexing, then it knows what's there because you fed it the right information.
Exactly. Yeah. You used a good word, you know, you fed it. And that's the problem with most of these websites is they're not feeding the machine that is Google's algorithm.
Right. I always looked at the Google algorithm like the cat in the backyard that comes to your door, the one that your parents tell you never to feed. And okay. you want to be feeding the Google algorithm what it wants to eat. So it just keeps coming back. So, Ari, so how do people react? Like when you give them the big value proposition that you can dominate Google search without paying for ads, their first instinct for people that, you know, might not be an SEO is like, I don't know if that's even real. Do people give you that kind of reaction?
Kind of to a little deviation of that. But what's interesting is, you know, I've been in this so I got into web design in 99, so 21 years ago. And then I started my company 13 years ago. So in that 13 years of straight SEO, in the first few years, it was like, hey, this is cool, this is new. And it was like the shiny object back then. Like right. That was the hot thing. And then now it's like, it's so weird because you know, we're busier than ever, we've grown more than ever. So the market is there and the demand is there, but there's so much more demand available that people are getting caught up in Facebook ads and ClickFunnels. And like, right. There's nothing wrong with those, but it's almost like they are such a shiny object right now that they're blinding and distracting everybody. Like, hey, there's like all these other free ways, more stable ways. Like I know we're talking about algorithms, but SEO, if you have the patience to get your website to page one, once it's there, it's pretty stable. Like you really got to screw something up for it to go away. And so now you don't have the variable ad budget. Like right now with the coronavirus, you know, some people are, okay, we're bleeding money or we have none. And so we can't increase our budget or we can't even pay our existing budget. But then if you do that, then you cut off your source of leads. So what are you going to do? You know, my clients, nothing. We're good, you know?
Right. I love that. I actually have always been a big fan of the organic exposure over the paid because you really control that and you're playing the game by the rules. And as such, you get rewarded. Where do you get started with somebody? I know you've got two buckets, but when somebody wants to dominate Google search without paying for ads, what is the beginning of the knowledge transfer that you have to provide them in order for them to understand how to do that?
It largely starts with those two buckets. So the ideal type of clients that we work with are the ones that understand, like I said, this is a slow game, right? So SEO, like if somebody comes in and says, well, actually I'll flip it the other way. If somebody comes to you and says, I can get you on top of Google without paying for ads in 30 days, like just run. Because the logistics behind what you have to do is just not possible to do it correctly. So when somebody comes to us, ideally they've usually been referred and so they're already in that mindset. But in general, like that's where you want to start. It's like, okay guys, set expectations. Here's the general process, is given the bucket one, bucket two story. And then from there we say, okay, what we got to do is in bucket one, we're going to go through and fix your page speed. We're going to make sure it's mobile friendly, knock that out. But while we're starting that, parallel to that, what we do is we start bucket two. So that way, and I'll dig deeper into that in just a moment. So that way, by the time we're done with bucket one, bucket two is ready to launch. And so what bucket two is, okay, let's do competitive analysis. Let's do keyword research. And where we kind of separate ourselves from the competition is we really focus on the intent. And so instead of just saying, do you want to show up, you know, this word makes sense without doing research, then we're going to target that. No, because I'll give you a very good example. We had a client years ago that does circuit board assembly. So they work on building electronic devices. And so part of that is they have the printed circuit boards, whether it's, you know, TVs, monitors, computers. And so what happens is they deal with printed circuit boards a lot. And so before we came in, they were spending a ton of time and money on the word printed circuit board. But guess what? They don't make printed circuit boards. And so their audience was wrong. They had people coming to them saying, can you make the board, not assemble my device? So they had 80% of their time and their budget on something that wasn't converting at all. So what we want to look at is, okay, what is it? What is the competition throwing money at? Because usually if you follow the money, it's probably because it's driving a return. So there's a good chance it'll drive a return for you. Then we look at the intent. Does this keyword attract the right audience and the right buyer with the right intent to convert? So it's largely an analytics play. And then after that, it's building the brand awareness, putting out the right content that supports those targets and that research.
Okay, I love it. I'd like you to flesh out intent for a moment, because if you don't mind, for a lot of people, they may not understand the emphasis on intent and how to define it and then be able to use it to your advantage. Mm-hmm. Can you spend a few moments on that?
Yeah. So, and I'll give you a free tool that you can use too. So, why don't I illustrate what intent means while I illustrate this free tool? So there's a website called answerthepublic.com. And so you can go to Answer the Public. And the example I always use is shoes. So let's say I'm a shoe retailer. I go to answerthepublic.com and I type in shoes. What it's going to do is it's going to spit out this visual chart that says the who, what, when, where, and why about shoes. Now, where it's getting this data in one example is, you know how, you know, Todd, you go to Google and you start typing in how are shoes? And then before you can finish the sentence, it goes, how are shoes made? You know, how are shoes stinky? How are shoes whatever? And so what Google is saying is, Todd, you're not the first person to start typing this question. And based on our historical data, you probably want to finish your query with one of these other searches. And so that right there is Google like telling you the secret. It's like, hey, this is what people search for. And so you as the shoe manufacturer, you go to Answer the Public, which pulls data from places like that and spits you out this chart. And then what you do is you look at this chart and then you go, okay, one of the things is, why do shoes get smelly? No, I don't sell an aerosol, so that's not the right intent for my audience. How are shoes made? No, that's more just, you know, curiosity. But then if you find the one that says, how can I find, you know, or how, what are the best hiking shoes? Because it's the who, what, when, where, and why. And if you sell a hiking boot, then you target that one, because that shows the intent behind your buyer. Like your buyer wants something very specific. So you don't target shoes because that's too broad. You target hiking boots because that is exactly what you offer and shows the intent behind your buyer.
I love this, because when it's almost like you can follow intent from your audience all the way through the customer journey as like the dog treat that moves them through the stages, because what they're going to be searching for needs to match the page they're going to land on. Mm-hmm. It needs to have matching intent, because if not, people lean out and they're like, this isn't for me. But when it is, well, exactly what they're looking for, they lean in.
Yep.
And then the content moves from what's going on inside of their head right now through that customer journey. So you can kind of mature the conversation and move them through to the decision-making process. I love this. And I don't think a lot of content creators start, Damon, with a intent-focused path. So when you lay that out, it's really nice, because you're coming right from search, and then Google is your friend that's going to guide you through the way on what people are actually searching on. It's simple, but also really smart.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what we were saying in the intro. People overcomplicate this, but this kind of illustrates how it's simple, not fast. But as you said, you know, this is super simple concepts. And that's, you know, you explaining that journey is where bucket one and bucket two get married, because bucket number two brought them into your website. And then because of bucket number one, your website loads quickly. It's mobile friendly. You have good call to action. And then that's when they come together. And then that's when their conversions happen.
All right. I love this. So bucket two, you mentioned, is a popularity contest. Links would fit into the popularity, a subcategory of popularity. Is that right?
For sure. Yeah. So what we want to focus on is, you know, I'm assuming what you're getting at is, you know, backlinks and quality versus quantity. Is that where you want to go?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, I don't think businesses really talk about it. And yet it's such an essential element to the mix.
Yeah. So that's kind of gone on the evolution of how I said, you know, 13 years ago, it was SEO was, you know, people were more in tune with it. And then nowadays, because they're kind of, you know, the people that know SEO, they are all in on it, but all these other things that have distracted the other people's awareness about it is where there's the detachment from when people used to talk about backlinks and where they don't now. So what a backlink is when another website links to your website. And so that's, as you said, that's a perfect example of the popularity contest. So who is talking about Todd's website? How many people are talking about Todd's website? Are they the cool kids that are talking about Todd's website? So to correlate that to you know, popularity contest to what that means in a backlink. So are, you know, how many websites are linked to Todd's website? Are they the cool relative links? You know, if you have a website about marketing and other people are linking to you, then hopefully those other links coming in are also about marketing. If you got links coming in from Joe's Chicken Farm, that has absolutely nothing to do because it was just an easy website to kind of hit and squeeze in a link, then Google pays attention to those things. So in 2011 and 2012, there was two really big algorithm updates to Google. So in 11, he starts smiling.
I just got excited, man, because that's where I was in my heyday in, you know, in SEO world. So you just fired me up there. Go on. I'm excited.
So where you're going. In 2011, there was an update called Panda. And so Panda comes in and Google says, all right, you know, people, content's important, but we realize people are playing this game. And so people are stealing content en masse from other websites and just copying and pasting or aggregating it and just puking it together. And so they said, all right, okay, now it's quality. There's still quantity in there. You know, you want to crank out fresh content, but now it's much more quality. So just instantly the whole play on content changed. And then in 2012, kind of the same concept, but with links, and this algorithm called Penguin came out. And since then, I'm disappointed because there's no more black and white named algorithms about furry animals. So, So the Penguin comes in and says, all right, everybody knows now that links are this core part of Google's algorithm, but people are just spamming the crap out of sites. Right. So things called link directories popped up, which are websites have absolutely no value. They're just this way to just crank out links and links and links and just point links to other links and other links. Yeah. And then, you know, people started spamming comments fields and putting in linkable signatures on message boards.
Right.
And so anything that you could do at scale to create a link, people were just abusing. And so Google came in and said, all right, links are still super valuable. There's this old video about Google's former SEO kind of head, Matt Cutts. Yeah, so he did one of his Q&A and said, well, why don't we just get rid of links as a value? And he said, we looked at it and the results were worse. So we still need to keep links as a factor, but now we're going to focus on quality control. So now it's quality instead of quantity. So, you know, this is all of this good content, good content, good links. All of this goes to illustrate like, hey, these are very simple concepts, but the logistics behind them mean it takes time. So that's why SEO, you know, people say, I kind of cheat people when they say, what's the secret to SEO? And I say, I'll tell you the number one thing, it's patience. And then there's like, oh, come on, that's cheating, Damon. But it's really true. You got to know, you know, if you know what you're doing and just give it the time, then usually it's a win-win.
Yeah, it's so cool. It is one of those areas in digital marketing where clients are impatient, but the results take patience, learning, adjustment, discovery, and so on. It's an interesting dynamic. In Forbes on April 20th, of this year, you wrote about the 8 SEO myths to let go of. Can I throw a couple at you and then you kind of tee off on them?
Yeah, you know, I have part 2 of that, 7 really? More that's going live any day.
Boom.
So there are 15 out there for you.
That's beautiful. All right, the first one I've got here is you don't have to pay Google to find your site. Really? Is that a myth? Break it down for me.
So the old SEO days was, okay, I got this new website. Now what? And so you used to kind of have to ping Google, and you could, there used to be just a submission tool. And so you'd go there and damonburton.com and submit it. And then it go, okay, I see your site, and you know, we're going to figure out what to do with it after that, but at least we know it's there. And so there are still services, largely by spam emails, well, where they'll just like spam lists and say, Damon, we know that you have this website, because they'll, you know, there's ways you can see what new domains were registered at GoDaddy or wherever. And so these guys just like suck down this list and then spam them. And then they say, hey, we saw that you registered a domain. So make sure Google sees it and pay just $99 and we'll take care of it for you. But you don't need to do that anymore. We talked about Google Search Console earlier. You know, if you connect that, which you should anyway, because it's going to give you free insights into how your website's performing. As soon as you do that, you're in Google's eyes already.
Yeah. It's so cool. I vividly remember when it used to take weeks for your articles to get indexed, and then watching that drop down into days and then hours and then instant.
Yeah.
That whole like path is somewhat lost in today's world. On your list is meta keywords. What should people know about meta keywords?
Yeah, well, actually, before I jump into that, let me add to what you're just talking about. There was an algorithm that came out a while ago called caffeine. So there's a good example of no black and white animals. But this caffeine algorithm came out and said, okay, you know, caffeine, you think, okay, you know, fast, hyper, whatever. And so that's kind of the intent is Google said, okay, we want solid, legitimate, long form, in-depth content, but we also want fresh, relevant content. So the example I give is, you know, if somebody searches Olympics and there's no Olympics that, or there is Olympics that year, then that person probably wants to know about that, you know, the upcoming Olympics or the current Olympics, and not the ones from however many years ago. So caffeine came in and said, okay, let's equate timeliness to the intent query. And if it makes sense, then show them like fresher stuff. And so the reason why I bring that up is you say, you know, some things can show up instantly. So if you build a real credible website and Google trusts you, Todd's totally right. You can have something show up within just minutes of you publishing it. So anyways, meta keywords. Okay. So what a meta tag is there's different types of tags that have different rules, but the one we're talking about specifically is meta keywords. So not meta description. Meta description still has a little bit of value. Maybe we talk about that in another round, but meta keywords is, you know, when before Google came around, websites would say, okay, you know, how do I rank this? What's it about? And so the webmaster could say, my website's about A, B, and C. And you would just put A, B, and C in this little snippet of code. And the code doesn't show on the website for people to see. It's just in the code for search engines to see. And so people just started stuffing it with like the most irrelevant crap, like anything that would be, you know, news. Like a perfect example right now is Donald Trump is super polarizing, whether you love him or hate him. And so let's say this was 15 years ago, but we still had Donald Trump's polarity going on. Completely unrelated websites would start shoving Donald Trump in meta keywords, and the website might be about, you know, coffee, like something completely unrelated. So at some point Google said, all right, you guys are abusing this. We're going to look at these other things. We're going to look at the content. We're going to look at the backlinks. And so as of 2009, so 11 years ago, that same Matt Cutts guy came out and did a video, and he's like, no, we don't use them. And so 11 years later, people are still out there, and I see it on Twitter sometimes too, people asking questions about meta keywords, or some quote unquote SEO guy trying to pitch a lead and saying, I audited your website and you don't have any meta keywords. Like, so?
Yeah, right. Right. Well, I think those Matt Cutts videos were the word of search God for a long time. And so whenever Matt would drop a new video, we'd all scurry to our device and watch it and learn and then make the adjustments. And anytime Google's rolled out something or allowed people to input information and then it gets gamified, it's one of those items that's on the short list to get knocked off until their next iteration of their algorithm, and then they remove it and move on to a new one. And it's I always found it to be a very fun path. You mentioned backlinks a few moments ago, and then stop stuffing keywords. I still see this on websites all the time. Talk to me about the value of keywords, but also how people go and abuse them.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things we could touch on. Back in the old days of SEO, before the Penguin algorithm or the Panda algorithm, you know, it was just a quantity play. Yeah, yeah. If you knew what you knew now and could go back there, you would just dominate Google for everything. So people, because it was largely the amount of content and not necessarily the quality, people would just copy and paste, or like hide text, put white text on top of a white background so you couldn't see it, but then it would just say your keyword over and over and over and over and over. And so none of that works. And now Google is smart enough to come in and say, you know, a perfect example is, let's say you are an attorney, and so you're a personal injury attorney, and so you write content about personal injury and you mention attorney but not lawyer. Google's smart enough to go, okay, lawyer means the same thing as attorney. So even though Damon the attorney doesn't really say lawyer excessively, we know that he offers that service. So you don't have to abuse it. Yes, if you can also sprinkle in and diversify attorney with lawyer, that's great. But don't abuse, just don't stuff it over and over. And I think part of why this myth still exists is there's some tools that will do what's called a keyword density. And so if you have 1,000 words on a page and you say that word, you know, 10 times, then you have a 1% density. And so the SEO rule was 3 to 6%. Say your target word for your target page at a 3 to 6% rate. So here we are, we got 1,000 word article and we're saying Damon's personal injury 30 times.
Right. It became a joke at some point. Tanya Thomas thanks us for sharing this information. Knowledge is power. You're welcome, Tanya. We love doing it. I also received a question. This person asks, our company used to have one website. Now they have a series of micro sites that are each on their own URLs. Are we beating up our domain authority, our original domain authority, because we split up onto different sites?
Yes. So the problem you're running into is you're diluting the value of your brand and your content. So this is another old days thing. You used to be able to do microsites and they would call them doorway pages. And so this was before another algorithm called EMD, exact match domain. And so there was this algorithm that came out, you know, I don't remember how long EMD came out. I'm going to say 10 years, give or take. And so what happened is you used to buy damonsexactmatchkeyword.com. And that was just like a hack to the top because your domain matched exactly what you were selling. And so part of that myth still exists. And so I'm assuming this is why the question came up, is some of these sub-sites, micro-sites, are probably have keyword-specific domains. So that doesn't work anymore because that EMD, a couple reasons. One, that EMD algorithm, and all domains for the most part are just kind of neutral. Like, it doesn't really matter what it says anymore. It's really the value of the content inside of it. And so the other problem you have is you dilute what you're putting out there, or you're duplicating it, which is going to cause one of them to get a penalty. And so instead, if you can take, let's say there's six sites, I'm willing to bet that there's a lot of duplication across them. And so the problem with that is if you want to rank uniquely, you have to be unique. And so if there's no uniqueness, why is it going to show them? So let's take the alternative. Let's say there is unique value across them. Consolidate them, because now you got one really strong website instead of a variety of, you know, mediocre websites.
Yep. You know, how far down in a navigation does Google index? Like, some of these companies that I see will, off of the top nav, drop you down into like two or three or four different levels below that. At some point, does Google's algorithm just stop, or does it just keep going down in indexing?
It won't stop indexing it, but it will start devaluing it. So it'll still find the pages. And another reason why it probably finds the pages is earlier we talked about sitemaps. And so most websites nowadays have a sitemap built in. And so it's just going to feed Google and say, hey, I understand you're like crawling the depth of these navigations and menus, but instead of guessing where everything is, we're just going to tell you, like, here's the sitemap. So it's probably going to find it anyway. But what it does pay attention to is like we said earlier, treat Google like a customer. And so Google's going to say, well, if somebody goes to a website and, you know, they hover over a thing, and then there's a drop down, and then another drop down, and then another drop down. You know, yeah, people aren't really
going to
follow. Yeah. And on that same note, you know, so nowadays the trend on a lot of websites is this big header image that takes up like half of the website.
Yes.
Sure, visually it looks fine, but the problem is just like the menu question, you're pushing that down. Well, now you're pushing the content down because you got this big fat image at the top. Right. And then Google sees all your explanations down here, and then it's going to go, must not be that valuable if we really got to search for it. So it's the same thing with the menu. If you got to work for it, then Google's going to say, I had to work for that. So it must not be that important.
Damon, I suspect when very large companies start splitting off into microsites, it's typically because they've got so many different types of customers and so many different products that it's hard for them to display that in the navigation and expect anybody to find it. You know, like if you go to AAA's website, the Automobile Association of America or something, they have like 40 businesses inside of one company with navigation that's crazy. So
yeah, you saying that yesterday, it's funny. I got my new card just yesterday.
Right on. Dude, that's big time. That's big time. And so I think that's why there's that trend with companies, because they know they're not being found because they're so buried. And they're trying to claim their own part of their own business unit out of a much larger business where they're getting lost. That's my guess.
Well, it depends on what you're in. Yeah. I mean, if you have a big enough company, then maybe, and I can actually give you an example, but it's still going to break down to what we talked about earlier. What's the uniqueness in what you're offering? What are the value propositions? So if all of your products are still under the same umbrella, and keep it on one website. So one example is, you know, I've done consulting for a large hotel chain. And so they have subsets of different named chains. And so they kind of picked a happy medium. They still want the authority of their top level domain, but they also want to build out the unique brands underneath it. So what they did in that case, excuse me, was subdomains. And so now it's hotel1.damonburton.com and hotel2.damonburton.com. But then damonburton.com still builds up, but the hotel chains, because it's in a subdomain, can technically be treated differently. So now we have another client that we're working with that's in a technology, and their technology has very different purposes, you know, problems that it solves. And so it's one company, but with like three completely different products. And so in that case, it makes sense to do differently, because we can genuinely build out the authority and the value propositions of three different entities. But in the case of the question earlier, where it's like, hey, we got six sites of the same thing and we're just diluting ourselves, then don't do it for that reason.
Yep, that's a problem. Look, I could talk to you and pick your big brain all day, but I want to give people an opportunity to learn more. Where can people find out about your new book, Outrank, and then where can people find out more information about you?
Yeah, I appreciate it. So Facebook, I'm obviously on there. LinkedIn, I'm probably a little more active. I've been a little slacking the last couple of weeks because of the book. I appreciate the opportunity to mention that. So Outrank, you can get it on Amazon. I'm also going to be giving away free copies on freeseobook.com. And then also on the thank you page of that is a link to a free Facebook group that I have where I actually give away free advice. I'm not pitching anybody in there.
He's Damon Burton. His website, damonburton.com. He's a Forbes contributor. His new book, Outrank. For those that didn't hear it earlier, it's a guide to all of you that want to figure out how to dominate Google search results without having to pay for ads. Damon, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Video Marketing Mastery.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it.
Yeah, really nice to have you. And for those of you that are listening, this will end up in the podcast coming out in a week or so. Bye for now, everyone.
Okay, well, that was a lot of fun information. You know, for me, one of the big goals is to help you convince and convert with less effort and less time. And that's why using the power of video on your website and through your social engagements has been so important. But of course, SEO is such a valuable part of your digital strategy. I mean, I kind of take it for granted because that's where I got started, was in SEO and content marketing back in the day. But it's important for us to spend some time on this. I think what I'm going to start doing is I'll circle back to my SEO guru friends that I used to speak with on tour and bring them back to the Toddcast so they can share some of their information. It's important for me to continue to keep you as a well-rounded video marketer, because you can't just put a video on a website and expect it to perform. You've got to actually create the proper page and have the right strategies to move people through, because it's not just about the video being able to play. It's also about the entire environment around the video and the right supportive information. If you're struggling to figure out how you're going to transition your business to remote selling, well, I created 20 minutes of invaluable learning for you that you can get access to as a listener to the podcast. And all you have to do is go to wirebuzz.com/sales-remote. Oh, I think I screwed this up. wirebuzz.com/remote-sales. Yes, don't screw that up. I'll do it one more time. wirebuzz.com/remote-sales. And that's where you'll get access to the 20 minutes of video where I'm teaching my best tricks and tactics to help you convince and convert más rápido. If you're looking for more information, well, you should know that I'm creating right now a podcast episode on how long should a video be and attention, because these two topics are intertwined together. They're like brother and sister. And you can't start talking to people about video length until you understand proper attention and how to hack attention and control it. And so both of those are going to be coming up shortly. And I will continue to do my part, bring you the latest information in the world of video marketing and business, so you could be that video marketing master inside of your office. And if you want daily information, hit me up on LinkedIn. Now, I'm going to ask you one request. If you do hit me up on LinkedIn, drop me a little message in the DM. Let me know you're coming from the podcast. I would appreciate that so much. It makes my day to find out who you are and what you do. And so thank you in advance for doing that. Go the extra distance, DM me on LinkedIn, and I'll continue to do my part on your behalf. Advocate for you to bring you the latest information so you can weather this storm, grow your business, and become a video marketing master. Peace.